we had to change from 9:30 to 10 because we not anticipating the airport at the end of the day. We had to amend the program because we received a request from National Chamber that they are requesting that the engagement was supposed to have this morning regarding the commission. Then we're supposed to receive from National Treasury, specifically the Accountant General and the Auditor General as well as the department. So we had to move that. Then the request, the proposal that was made on the 28th. However, we were ready on the 28th. So we were then to stay. Everything was about the impasse sort of between all the general departments. One of the members know that there is an appeal that the department is not agreeing with of a disclaimer of the financial statement of the department. So we wanted to get comments before the fire was discussion about concerns. So we requested to move that one as a result because we're not going to spend a lot of time there because we are supposed to receive two briefings on the protocols. One of the outcome of the conference held last year fall in Germany, and then the briefing on the study protocol. So we don't expect those two briefings to take a lot of time. So that's why we have to move. But I must say, one of the members and officials, it's a gentleman that we just went through the most hectic period last week, and we asked him continuing to do that. We are very fortunate as South Africans that we are living through very exciting times. Last week, our democracy was tested when we had a very seamless transition from one administration to the other, but still the administration of the ANC from one president to the next, and we went through that transition without any conflict, without any strife, and we had to usher in a new president on Thursday. National Assembly elected a new president, President Ramaphosa, as a result of the resignation of the former president Zuma. That process was very interesting. President Zuma sent out the presentation of the president of the country. I'm sure most of you will come to meet waiting for the announcement, watching TV and so forth. And they disrupted the Valentine. But we did get the information. As you know, it was after the ruling party's national identity. Called the president of the administration, and later on, the following day, the Chief Justice was available to preside over the meeting of the assembly to elect the president. Went on Nelson, later on, corpo que foi causa de funcionar do que eles. Mas que ele tem o dono, ele acha que ele tem o presente, o comitê de Deus, o homem e para ti. And therefore there is much more expectation of the administration of Christ and the Son of our apostles. Yesterday, as you know, we spent the whole day in the chamber and the joint sitting of parliament, listening to the debate which went very well. No disruption, the mood was very high. Arguments around policy questions, which is expected because we are all moving from different perspectives, moving from different ideological persuasion. And therefore, we expect that the democratic such debate was assumed. So, in case for the first time, the debates were not characterized by violence, by people being taken out of the house, and so forth. It was a mature discussion, mature debate, as you would expect. So hopefully this is what will characterize this parliament going forward. As I'm saying, we live in an exciting time. I'm sure it's quite an exciting moment. It feels so good to be a South African. So that's where we are. Honorable members, and I'm sure and I see that our honorable members from this committee acquitted themselves with a lot of dignity as honorable members of parliament during the period which nearly came in very 10 minutes. One, but it went very well. We do have some apologies there from the Honorable Minister. Of course, she did speak to me yesterday that she will be attending a joint meeting of all cabinet committees this morning. The Deputy Minister is also attending a similar meeting. DG is attending a meeting with the Deputy, with the Director General and the President.
Thank you.
tekrardan şifre yok belki. Şimdi de management, şu konuların bazıları, şimdi de management, to respect, şu bazı aspects, şifre de same. So, the setup can be shared. Yeah, those are some good apologies. Can we... I saw, before we get to the presentation, I saw a presentation that we were supposed to get from the department on the issue regarding the HD and National Treasure. I saw just a four-page presentation. I don't know whether the presentation was going to get. I know that we are not discussing that. But I'm sure you can say that this presentation, that presentation was not going to consider. I don't know whether somebody was very lazy to prepare something for us, but that was very pathetic. So I'm just saying that even in the future when we are going to discuss, don't expect that kind of thing. Because it was a change, we are not going to be paralyzed. Just about the end. Okay, who's going to take us through? Welcome, I said, from overseas, you're always overseas. You're back now from the meetings with all the important people in the world. I'm going to take us from Cape Verde.
Thank you. Chair, good morning, Honorable Chair, and good morning to Honorable members. I will start with the presentation on the prospect of the outcome of the 21st session of the Conference of the Parties to the United Nations Convention on Climate Change that was held from the 6th to the 17th of November, 2017 in Bonn, Chair, the purpose is just to provide a brief on the outcome of the session, to also outline the significance of development in the negotiations for South Africa and Africa in particular. And as a way of background, Chair, the climate change poses a significant threat to our developmental goals, and of course it poses also a threat in terms of the gains that we've made thus far. And I think, Chair, it is quite very clear that there are severe impact of climate change in Africa on the receiving end, and Africa as a continent is also vulnerable due to the limited adaptive capacity. This is exacerbated by quite a number of issues, inclusive of the widespread poverty and the existing levels of development in the continent. The Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which is the scientific body chair, estimates that by 2020, between 75 and 260 million of people in the continent are projected to be exposed to the increased water stress due to climate change effects. And by the same year, 2020, in some countries, there will be an impact in terms of the rainfall and agricultural yields that will be reduced to up to 80%, which of course has severe implications in terms of the food security. And towards the 21st century, there is a projected sea level rise that will affect the low-lying coastal areas, and there's seen some of these impacts shared even in our countries and times. The global warming of 2 degrees will not be evenly distributed, Chair. In parts of Africa and South Africa, we will experience between 4 and 6 degrees of warming on average, which will then bring about some excessive heat waves which we started experiencing, and climate change already leading to unexpected climate variability because of the chain. I think in this regard, for example, we started experiencing drought and now, addressing the issue of drought, particularly in the Western Cape. South Africa, Chair, a high carbon intensive economy, heavily reliant on coal. And I think the message there is we moving more towards changing the development path by bringing in some of the renewable as part of our energy mix policy. And of course, the cost with time of the renewable is being reduced. The 23rd session, Chair, was held from the 6th to the 18th of November 2017 in Bonn, Germany. And it, of course, during COP21 in Paris, it resulted in a seminal Paris Agreement, which has been ratified. And COP22, 23, and 24 have been tasked to work on a decision that will be focusing on the implementation of the Paris Agreement. Africa participated in COP23, which, as usual, South Africa provided leadership, particularly for the African negotiators on the managing issues. And COP23 was expected to focus, to prioritize the decision on the loss and damage, because in the main, it was the president was Fiji, even though it was hosted in Germany. Fiji is a small island, and they are, of course, as well in the receiving end of the impact of climate change, particularly on the loss and damage. And the loss and damage are those impacts that, despite the mitigation and adaptation interventions, there will still be those impacts. And it was expected as well to focus on finance, technology, and capacity building support, particularly for developing countries' action. The main priority, Chair, was to advance the work on the implementation guideline of the Paris Agreement, they normally call it a rule book, which has to be adopted during COP24, the coming COP. And was also to establish an arrangement for a facilitated dialogue, the Talagoa Dialogue, which is aimed at enhancing the post-2020 ambition in terms of the implementation of the agreement. As a country, South Africa had three main priorities going to the meeting. The first one was to advance the work on the implementation guidelines of the Paris Agreement. That, of course, was set to be adopted in COP24 in Poland 2018, together with the facilitated dialogue to enhance the post-2020 ambition. The second priority area for South Africa was to place a specific focus on the Durban commitment for pre-2020 action and support, and particularly from developed countries. And the third one was to obtain a decision on financial support for developing countries, in particular on the future of the adaptation fund and the communication by developing countries in terms of the scale of financial support that will be provided in the main to developing countries, by developed countries. On the key outcome, the major outcome of the conference was on the Fiji momentum for the implementation, which of course addresses the following. One is the completion of work program under the Paris Agreement. Parties confirmed their determination to accelerate the work on the Paris Agreement mandate. And parties welcome the design of the 2018 facilitated dialogue to be conducted from April to November in the main to build momentum for the implementation of the Paris Agreement. But for pre-2020 implementation and ambition, parties decided to convene a stocktake of the pre-2020 implementation and ambition at COP24 in 2018 and COP25 in 2019. And of course, parties were asked to make sure that they ratify the Doha Amendment, particularly for the implementation of the Kyoto Protocol. Well, significant success for the African group was around the decision on adaptation funds, of which the decision endorsed that the adaptation fund shall serve the Paris Agreement, subject to the decision on the governance and the institutional arrangement, the safeguards and the operating modalities of the fund that will be now discussed in 2018. I think just to emphasize that in the main, the developed countries were completely against the adaptation funds to serve in the Paris Agreement. The intention in the main from the developed countries was to kill the adaptation fund, because this is where you have grant funding to fund adaptation, and particularly for developing countries. In the main, they were trying as well to change the modalities, the instruments of the adaptation fund, because adaptation funds, a grant funding. So they were as well trying to change the instruments to make sure that it should take into account the logo and so forth. But this chair, I think, was one of the great success in terms of this fund being preserved to serve under the Paris Agreement. Several developed countries have already alluded to made pledges in terms of the support for the adaptation funds. So following the decision, we've seen a number of countries making pledges to support the adaptation fund, in the main the pledge is to have equivalent to $93 million. And other outcomes of finance include the decision around the long-term financing, the process to decide on the upfront communication of the financial support provided by developed countries. This was also a very contentious issue where the developed countries did not want to provide an indicative in terms of the support and the funds that they would provide in terms of the implementation of the Paris Agreement. Guidance as well on the Green Climate Fund, which clarified that all developing countries should have access to all the financial instruments. This was one of the things that was emphasized under the Green Climate Funds, to ensure that the developing countries would be able to have the access. The other significant decision included the establishment of the Gender Action Plan to make sure that gender is taken into account when we implement the Paris Agreement. And this is to ensure that even within the bodies there will be a good representation of gender within the policy formulation at national level. The gender aspect has to be taken into account in the implementation of climate change initiative. And of course, there was an agreement on the assessment of the current technical examination process on both mitigation and adaptation. These are technical work that supports the implementation of both adaptation and mitigation. So there was an agreement that the technical examination, the technical work, has to carry on in terms of supporting the implementation of both adaptation and mitigation. And the other key issue was around the guidance of the Executive Committee of the Warsaw International Mechanism on the Loss and Damage. As I already indicated, Chair and Honourable Members, the loss and damage are in the main the damages that will happen despite the litigation, despite the adaptation contamination. And one of the key things here, the developed countries did not want to support the program of work for this Warsaw Executive Committee, the committee that coordinates the work around the loss and damage. They did not want to support the program of work. But however, this was one of the areas that COP23, they were able to agree on the program of work, which the main support your small islands and developing countries. And I think the other notable thing was the progress that has been made on the parenthood program. This includes the work that is happening around adaptation, the work that is happening around initiation, to try and develop a rule book that will guide the implementation of the parenthood agreement. The political dynamics, Chair, I think, revolves around the announcement by the UN to withdraw from the Paris Agreement, which of course cast doubt on the US position and its intention in the negotiation. And it was quite very clear that the US delegation to the World Climate Conference indicated that they did not have a clear instruction and were therefore engaging on the basis of what they understood to be the position that of course did not change, that do not change across the administration. But there was a start of a very slow engagement by the US in the negotiation, but as the negotiation progressed, they were engaging along those lines in terms of the position that they believe is not going to change across the administration. And of course, this has put a great doubt in the extent to which parties can trust the U.S. as a reliable negotiating partner during the negotiations. And there has not been any effort to renegotiate the Paris package, which stands to be, of course, the developing countries who resisted any possibility and any attempt in terms of renegotiating the Paris Agreement. And of course, during the high-level session, France, Germany signaled their determination to raise the level of ambition to try and close the gap that will be left by the US. And I think, Chair, just the key message there is the whole international community resonates in terms of pushing towards the implementation of the Paris Agreement. Well, the negotiation was not met by the willingness, particularly by developed countries, in terms of engaging meaningfully on the area of finance, capacity building, and technology. And I think this was one of the very contentious engagements, particularly as I've already alluded to, that in terms of finance, the developed countries did not want to, you know, upfront provide an indicative level of support. The priority for South Africa going forward is therefore to impress upon developed countries to honor the commitment and to make sure that we secure progress in terms of Article 9.5 on the indicative support as key towards implementing the Paris Agreement, particularly that the funding that will be supporting developing nations. And I think there are many challenges to the principle of differentiation, particularly regarding the eligibility of the so-called middle-income countries to receive financial support from the financial mechanism of the convention, because you could see even on the ODA trying to restructure so that the countries categorized as middle-income countries are not even prioritized for the ODA. And developed countries are increasingly directing their development aid to least developed countries. And I think it is our view that that money is directed to the so-called emerging economy would have a very significant in terms of the mitigation potential. As a result, investing into the low carbon future of the economy will remain the best investment from a climate change perspective, because it has the ability to push down in terms of the emissions. Well, the Paris Agreement will require an enhanced reporting obligation as part of this enhanced transparency system.
for developing countries. As a result, specific provisions were made in the agreement for support to be provided by developed countries to developing countries, both for capacity building in terms of reporting and also for the ongoing actual implementation of the reporting processes. So one of the key arguments is developing nations will need support to can be able to have the capacity to can put their international reports in place. It is vital that these provisions are implemented fully and appropriate resources are provided to developing countries. And it is crucial that developing countries ensure that any gap in ambition related to pre-2020 period is not transferred to developing countries. And I think this is one of the areas that as we engage in COP24, we will be discussing again. Developed countries' emission in excess of their fair allocation must remain their responsibility. Chair, remember the principle around common manufacturing responsibility is to expect the developed countries to take quite a large share in terms of pushing the emission down. So that will remain as one of the underpinning principles after 2020. The implication for us as a country is that certain agreements, when fully implemented, will require us to submit the nationally determined contribution every 5 years, which details South Africa's climate response. So each and every 5 years we will review and revise the NDC and submit it, which will on how the country will be responding to climate change, and will also be expected to provide support in terms of the attainment of the NDC. And the nature and extent of this obligation will only be clear once the Paris rulebook has been finalized. But of course, the country will build on the current national systems established in terms of the climate policy that we have, the mitigation systems that is in place, we are working in terms of developing other instruments, be it on the adaptation strategy and the framework for the air warning systems. So our implementation will be building on the ongoing work that we are doing as a country. And I think the specific outcome of COP23 does not require a national implementation requirement for South Africa, and the outcome of COP23 has no further organizational and personal implication as current, because we're still working on towards finalization of the rule book, which will then go forward guide the implementation of the Paris Agreement. Thank you very much, Chair and members.
Okay, thank you very much, Joe, for the presentation, which is a summary, I guess, of how many days of negotiation? Quite a number.
Two
weeks. Yeah, so this is a summary of the motivation negotiations. Thank you very much. Maybe if I may ask, when is there an expectation on when is the rule going to be finalized? In COP24 are there negotiations between now and COP24 and I'm going to see the rule being finalized before I can open.
Thank you, Chair. There will be negotiations. There will be three sessions this year. expectation is of 24, then who has to be like that? That's the expectation.
Okay, Honorable members, can I take questions? Honorable Spencer, Dr. Miguel,
you for that as a developer country. given by Jesus on the condition of our enemies. And I also saw the according to the middle income countries, I think they won't be able to be part of any financial assistance. That would very, very people they will want to be not coming. Yeah, and that would be humanity. And the other issue, second issue, you know, how the state of the environment resources that are required, whether it's human or financial resources, to be able to do all the required reporting that would be needed after the global is finalized.
Just a few questions, perhaps. The first thing we have in the 2020 elections and Zimbabwe, we left with about 2 years. Thank you.
have those discussions along with the bottom of your head. My title or dimension around which I want to read my poem is we must be able to anticipate what we have from this discussion. So it's not about waiting until the root book is finalized and unfolded. These are expected of you, and you are not anticipating what could come. As the discussion proceeds, and I'm not saying that you might have concluded anything of this, but I'm just saying perhaps questioning and perhaps that we move with the negotiation. We must be able to anticipate what is likely to be organizational and personal implications on our action.
Thank you, Jim. Firstly, COP23 was a launch of the Powering Past Global Alliance. This was led by the UK and Canada. Now, I would just like to know whether we are part of that alliance. This is a coal phase out alliance with certain deadlines for developed countries and developing countries. Where is South Africa on this issue? Are we part of this? Can someone explain? And then I'd also like some more clarity on the Talanoa dialogue, which is a facilitated dialogue. The way I understand it is a conversation to find solutions. And the deadline being COP24, which is the end of this year. But what input is South Africa made on this dialogue, or what input are we making? What contributions are we making, if any? And the last one is if someone could tell us the size of our delegation to Bonn, because I have a rough idea, but I would just like to get clarity on that one, because it sounded like a large number, a big number for this country, which also has a big expense. Explain that to one, please. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Well, those are the questions. I hope you are ready to answer those questions. If I may add to the question, the relationship between the work that South Africa is doing in the negotiations, the commitment that I have is for those negotiations and arguments and the action in the house to try and meet the obligations that I have from the arguments that are coming from there. Now in particular, there is a statement that I think they were coming out from there or comfortable that investment in low carbon the future in terms of the economies in terms of the climate change that they're experiencing now. The question is, what are we doing in terms of making sure that there is that transition to a low carbon economy? We have mitigation and adaptation scenarios that we'll come up with, which will help us to do that transition. I'm raising this because in our discussion with the two of the leaders, the leaders of greenhouse gases, which is ESCOM and PASO, not on the greenhouse gas emission, but on the air quality stuff. We are struggling to make progress, so to speak, because of the high level of resistance that we are experiencing from the just compliance with the minimum emission standards that have been set on the quality standard. We are experiencing the rolling postponement, continuing to apply postponement compliance. So you can already pick up that there is no appetite to comply. Now, with regard to the greenhouse gas emissions, there seems not to be a sense that there is that willingness to do the transition. We are waiting for the integrated resource plan. I don't know what is that we have released somebody that was approved. I can't get that here. We don't know. Maybe you might be having information about that because we are working on the 2010 integrated resource plan. So, is there anything we've done with that? The program of the Bureau of the CNH seems like it's starting, it's going, it's starting. So I want us to speak to that because those are the things that will make us a transition. It doesn't matter what agreement is passed at the international multilateral forums, but as long as there is no action in the country, we are not able to do the transition that I'm talking about. So that's what I want us to talk about, aiming towards colleagues and colleagues. Lastly, the issue of legislation, if we can be given clear timelines as to what are the extra steps. I know I raised this question in the past. We are waiting for cabinet. Is it ready to be presented to cabinet? And that being a memorandum that is submitted to request that it was said to cabinet, where are we in terms of the legislation? Let me go and answer the questions and we can pass down to your colleagues here.
Yes, thank you very much, Chair, and I will ask my colleagues to come in. But just to start on the work of the legislation, we have done the social economic studies, we have put the memorandum of the submission to cabinet is ready. We are anticipating that the day that we I don't know the actual date by heart, but I will email. And everything, Chair, that has to be done from our side has been done. We are going to the cluster. In March, we'll be in the cluster. In April, we'll be in cabinets. And we anticipate that April, it will be published for public comment. So we've done what we had to do in that regard. Chair, on the issue around the investment, maybe just to start with your question, I'm going to ask my colleague on the mitigation to just indicate what are we doing on the mitigation space. But we, from the adaptation side, is when we did the long-term adaptation scenarios, which started to tell us in terms of what are the likely scenarios that we have to take into account. We have worked with the provinces to undertake the risk and vulnerability assessment so that we can understand where the hotspots are. And we, of course, with the provinces, developed the adaptation response plan across the 9 provinces, which is a plan that now we try to work with them to formulate what are called priorities and project proposals so that we can go going forward to facilitate the implementation of those adaptation plans across the 9 provinces. We work with the municipality through what we call the response toolkit in the main to try and empower the municipalities to undertake their that it led to the encouraging working with the coastal municipalities, and we're working with them as well in terms of assisting them to undertake the research that we understand, but most importantly, to be able to integrate climate change into their planning processes. So we're really working with them on that chair, and we are hoping that as we go forward, it will be more of a program design to facilitate implementation. Over and above that, there are a number of adaptation projects that are on the ground in three provinces, in KwaZulu-Natal, in the Limpopo, Mbale district, and in the Northern Cape, which look at on a number of issues around the issues of livelihoods, like smart agriculture, and the issues around the animal system. So there are pockets of interventions that we are having here. But I will ask my colleagues to come in. There's quite a lot of work that on the litigation space has been done, either through the National Clinical Production Center in terms of pushing for the resource efficiency, the work around the solar water users, and the work that we are doing even through our National Green Fund in terms of the catalytic work in supporting green economy intervention, which is the main deal with both adaptation and mitigation. And in the last session, we presented a list of interventions that we have in the country across the provinces. So I think I just try to indicate, Chair, that there is work that is being undertaken, and I will ask my colleagues to from mitigation to add as well in terms of what we are doing. On the IRP, Chair, the indication is IRP has been approved. We don't have it, and we definitely are contributing. We will do an analysis and then let's see how we position ourselves as well. We don't have the last IRP. We did not access it, Chair. The issue around, I'll just touch down, Chair, and then my colleagues will come in. The issue around the indigenous knowledge, let me start with the indigenous expertise. So we are working with the different communities, particularly through the Adaptation Fund project in Cape Town catchment, where we are working on what we call the early warning systems, working with South African weather services, trying to make sure that we interface with people on the ground, we interface with the farmers by giving them the early warning system. But however, Chair, even during the COP, there are exchanges around indigenous knowledge, and it cannot be common across countries. Countries would have a different knowledge system that they can apply. There are a lot of, in the main of the side event, where there are a lot of exchanges in terms of countries sharing how they respond to the impact of climate change. The issue around, Chair, our reporting obligation, we are currently developing the monitoring and evaluation system. We currently releasing the GHG inventory, the biannual report, which is part of our monitoring and reporting. And we are very hopeful that come 2020, the system will be in place and functional, Chair. And in particular, the legal bill as well will help us in terms of engaging with the various sectors, because of the legal bill, we have to provide the carbon budget, we have to ensure that we enforce the reporting in terms of the emissions. So it's one instrument that once it is finalized will be very instrumental in terms of facilitating the work, Chair. The issue around the gender action plan, This is at a global level where the focus is around ensuring that we facilitate participation of women either in through our policy development, we facilitate their participation in terms of the programs that we design, but also to make sure that the gender aspect within the entire UN system, UNFCCC system, is taken into account. It might be in terms of participation, in terms of serving in the committees, in terms of the support of the UN system programs, because we believe that once you make a clear decision in terms of the participation of women into the UN processes, you will be able to influence the gender aspect as far as the policies are concerned. Chair, I think let me maybe give my Stella to come in on some of the general dialogue in terms of what we are doing, the issues around our perception, and let me give my Stella to you to make some remarks and we'll see how we finalize all the questions.
Engaging when in the main, the developed countries, they want to rechannel their funding to the developed countries. And there's no such thing to surprise them because there's not much funds. They have funds who can contribute to the issue of climate change. But what we've done, we have to safeguard ourselves because we can't afford them to be sustainable with this money. What we've done is to agree on the guidance to the Green Climate Fund, that the fund will fund all developing countries without any deviation from what we agreed for. However, what is creeping in now, particularly not only on the Green Fund, but also on the Global Environment Facility, we have seen that the more money they give you, the more they require of professional funding from your side. So that is a problem. But fortunately, the GF itself is a very small fund. The big fund is the Green Climate Fund. And we expect them to continue to put money in that particular fund. So that is the only way of safeguarding ourselves. But I'm sure, as you heard, those that came to the COP, that South Africa was taking a very difficult position around the issue of violence, particularly around what we call 9.5, which is really talking about developed countries providing us with indicative support. This is what we will contribute in the next coming 5 years. And this whole issue about their budget size as well is not possible to do that and so forth. But in the Paris Agreement, we already covered ourselves with that particular provision that they have to do that. Because that is the only thing that is going to inform the panel of our election. And they know it very well. So we are discussing when it comes to that. And this links directly to the Salanoa Dialogue. What do we expect the Salanoa Dialogue to do? Because Salanoa Dialogue has to answer 3 questions. Where are we? Where do we want to be? How do we get there? So what we expect that the Salanoa Dialogue would do was that it would lead into the revision of the NDCs, particularly of developed countries. And that should be informed by the special... Yes, Salanoa is nothing but a borrowed term from South Africa, which is a negotiation, Ubuntu. We had the Talking of 17 in South Africa. We had the Indaba. The Indaba, we call it the Indaba, where we bring everyone on board on the table to talk issues. So the Fiji, because it's a Fiji term, but basically it's the same thing. But what we want to do, what we really wanted to do before they even came with this term called Salanoa, is called a facilitative dialogue. And the aim there was that they should lead to the revision of NDCs. We commissioned a special report on how to get to 1.5 degrees. If it's possible, what actions we need to be taken. And we commissioned this to the scientific board in the IPCC. The IPCC will release that report in first week of October. And it's meant to be the main input into the Salanoa Dialogue. But the spirit, the latter the spirit of the facilitative dialogue was around 2 things. We've got 2 sets of NDCs. We've got NDCs that start in 2020 to 2030. And we've got NDCs that start in 2025 to 2035. So what we wanted to do was to have a common time frame. Under the facilitative dialogue, what we expected is that in 2020, those that have a 10-year NDC would give us a mid-year number. And those that have given us a mid-year number, 2025, would revise their NDCs to give us a
wrong same number. So we wanted to close that gap. But it looks like it's not going to be possible. So I just came from this where we raised that particular book with the European Union. And the European Union is continuing to revise their destiny, which is a 10-year period. And it's precisely because the US is not coming on board. So that is not going to happen. What will happen is that we'll try to use the space under the Salamanca dialogue and to maintain the political momentum towards climate action in general, particularly in the pre-2020 election, which is what we've always been saying. We need to keep the political momentum on the pre-2020 election. What is the pre-2020 election? This question was raised. It is about the ratification of the second commitment period of the Kyoto Protocol, what we call the Doha Amendment, and the fulfillment of the provision of the 100 billion per year by 2020, as pledged in 2009 in Copenhagen. And the last aspect of the pre-2020 is the closing of the current ambition gap, which is between 8 to 12 years. So those three pre-2020 areas is what we'll try to focus on during the Salamanca trial. We don't know where it will put us in the end, but what we are sure about is that it has already started to generate a more political momentum towards climate action, because cities already having their own conferences on their contribution to the pre-2020 and long term climate action, and because the regions are also expected to hold their own mini Talanoa dialogue. We will be brainstorming on how to do one for Africa on the 22nd of March. But as South Africa, we also want to change what we don't have an obligation to have a session on Talanoa dialogue. But what we want to do, we want to change what we call the national stakeholder engagement that normally talks about the position. To focus it more on the Salamanca spirit. And what we plan to do is to look at the three spheres of government, local, provincial, and national. What is the integration there? How do you recognize the actions that you are doing as local government to be contributing to the national target? So there's a national space there, a national dialogue that we need to undertake. But that is still anyone who's still planning that and will know they should do that. Yeah. How to go on. But Chair, we will continue with the insistence that we get a decision on the 9.5 day meeting. So, and we are very clear what we need to do. We understand what they are aiming for during COP24. It's only three things that all the rich countries are aiming for. The first one is the conclusion of this transparency framework, which is the reporting obligation. And the second one is the guidance on mitigation action under the FTC. And the third aspect, transparency, mitigation, and the compliance. Those are the only three areas that they're interested in. But you said fine, okay, you can bring your three areas on the table. What we want is South Africa two things. We want a decision on 9.5, so we want to craft that decision ourselves in terms of how they are going to communicate their need to support to us for our own climate action. And the second one is what we always said, which is around the pre-2020 space. How do you craft an international cooperative framework that will allow us to do more now in the pre-2020 area and in the post-2020 side. Because if you look at the decision on the NDC, when we submit the next NDC, we are expected to show progression. As South Africa, you said you are here, now we want you to be there. That's clear in black and white in the terrorist country. So if we do not get a good decision on the 9.5, we will be in some form of trouble. But if we come up with a good international cooperation framework, step to your adaptation. You're not going to wait for the television community to come and do your adaptation. So we've got space to indicate progression with the next NDC by increasing our adaptation ambition. So, which is something that we do naturally. So that is how we are covering our field, if I may answer that question. And when it comes to anticipation of this rule book and where we might be, well, in Paris we agreed that we need to build capacities in developing countries, particularly institutional capacities. And we came up with a program called CBIT, Capacity Building Initiative for Transparency. South Africa was the first country to put in a CBIT proposal. And it was accepted. So we intend to build capacity, not only in the environment, but throughout the entire government system, the relevant government system. We intend to build capacity through that civic program. It's quite at an advanced stage. We are just waiting actually for the final paper from Jeff on that one. It was a very intense process. It took us almost 2 years just to complete the whole program process. So we've agreed to that, and we are a recipient of $1 million for the implementation of that program. So that is the first anticipation. But also, as Joe has already alluded, we are doing our own mitigation, monitoring and evaluation system, so that we can see where we went wrong. Are we really transitioning to low carbon? Are we really building resilience? So we need to build such a system that will allow us to do that and evaluate all our actions. So we are dealing with that as well. And make I'm sure we'll talk more about what they are doing in companies and so forth in terms of forcing them to do a real action. The size of the delegation. Oh, before I come to that, UK and Canada both stayed out alliance. Definitely we are not part of the things of hope. And we do not have assurances on that, but so we cannot do it such alliance. We need to be clear where we are going and so forth. However, as the department has given, we love clean energy and we are pushing our sister departments to implement some of these big programs. So that was a pilot and a very interesting program on independent power producers, which has caused, as I said, Chip, to present the meeting for months and they are present the meeting and some movement around that. So, but that is the future. That is definitely the future. And our goal is not the future. I think we are very clear on that. Goal is not the future. And very soon we are going to find ourselves without any. But we are not part of that alliance.
Yeah, I know, I just want to say to continue to answer the question. Just to introduce something I want to say. Coal is not a future, but we know that there is a position of two coal power station. Currently, in Oakwood and another one in the Oakwood Valley, which we approved. And I understand that the basis for the approval was in 2010 by IRP, which predated the 25 votes. Which predated the submission of the NDC and which we don't know whether the scenarios that they use and what are approved in the ground. So it's quite an area which I think we will need to have some discussion with the department. I don't know whether it's taking us forward in terms of the transition or the volume of about that, I think it was also said that as well, which I don't know, I'm still thinking about, maybe we might have to have a special control of community for the single community around that. But it's something that I'm still trying to process in my mind, but I can see a contradiction somehow in the efforts that we're making to encourage people to spread everybody to move away from home. And now this approval as well. You might speak to this, you may not, but yeah, I'm saying that it undermines our efforts to move away. It undermines our efforts. I understand that it somehow impacts us to the NDC. I don't know how, but it's an issue that I think we need to talk about.
Thanks, Chair. Those are policy methods that are taken. But the basis for the statement that I made, that code is not a future, is based on the economics. The energy that is coming out of the renewables now is far much cheaper than what you expect to go global, except perhaps PhD in South Africa. But if it does go, you are was by the way, just to give you the accurate figure, South Africa did not even feature in the top five from Africa in terms of the delegation size. We did not even feature in the top five. We were somewhere down there, meaning that we took very few people in the call. Even with this reconfigured call, we were not top five when it comes to that. That's what we managed to achieve. And we are very proud of the negotiators who continue to give guidance to the African group, who continue to champion the struggle of the developing countries, who continue to insist that we get a fair deal, who continue to insist that we get all the assistance that we can, because we've got the potential definitely to grow more, only if we can keep the support. So I'll stop there.
I don't know whether you've got the number, maybe you can give the number, but it's 40 people share. 40 people share, 40 people share, that I'm sure they support research. If you don't have those guys, you don't need something to do. What do you have to do? Do you have the number? But you can just get that information from the hotel.
The other question, though, on the mitigation, Chair, just to allow Meg to respond.
Good morning, Honorable Members. Good morning, I'm Meg Mbwalela. I work for the Department of Environmental Affairs, responsible for climate change. Just to pick up a discussion.
What was the question?
I'm the director of the Boko Climate Change Planning Policy.
Yeah, you?
No, I've been around.
You've been around?
Yeah, I've been doing too. But
so we're not bringing you to Parliament.
No.
For the first time in Parliament.
I'm trying to try my new car. But I did the up what my boss. Let me say a discussion on the issues related to what we are doing in terms of ensuring that we reach our obligation in terms of ensuring that canal information is used. There's been a lot of talks and reports system that we are currently developing, and we believe this was approved by the government in 2015 when they were announced that this will be implemented in phases, with phase one being a voluntary phase. We are putting systems together, getting information and data so that beyond 2020 we are in a position to work. And the first step was to understand what various sectors are capable of doing in terms of emission reduction. Where we constructed what we call the marginal abatement curve, where we identify actions that need to be put in place for various sources of emissions to be arrested. And with that, you will understand how much you can go in terms of emission reduction, and how much will the interventions that you are proposing cost the country over a period of 20 to 30 years. And in this case, we projected up to 2050, and we're doing that because this is also in line with what we have communicated thus far to the national and international community as our long-term emission reduction objective, which we assess our emissions will take 30% decline up to the period of 2050. So we have those to the intervention, you will know that these interventions are in various sectors of the economy. For example, the majority of our emissions are coming from the energy that we generate, our power, because we generate them on coal. So it's important that we address those emissions. And the way of doing that is to influence the line department, which is the Department of Energy, ensuring that as they drop their energy mix, they are also emission compliant. So the policy adjusted plan has the breakdown of the code and consider the issues around emissions and the energy mix proposed there by taking that into consideration. And we understand that this is pre the Paris Agreement, and between then and now a lot has changed. We now have information on the renewable, the cost of renewable and the deployment of renewable has really increased in the number of options, and South Africa is also one of the players in that space, and we should be doing more in that space. As a result of that, we engage the Department of Energy in constructing the new IRP, which is not yet available. We have influenced the energy mix by ensuring that the clean energy has been that energy mix. And the electricity generation carbon space or budget that we gave them as we negotiated with them from 2021 to 2026, it there's a catered for coal fire power stations that we do in Australia, and the other two proposed coal fire power stations. So the proposed budget and I'm referring to those emissions, and the rest of the finance is also the other, the IMP is not yet up, so cannot transfer the have this discussion on that, but as soon as it comes up, we will engage them and discuss my environment. The other issue that we are addressing now, ensuring that we have a smooth system beyond 2020. We are talking about this mitigation system, aligning it to the timeline of 5 years. So what we are doing now is we are designing an approach and a methodology to allocate targets and budgets. Targets will be allocated to various sectors, and this will be based on the definition of bias of various sectors. The sector energy between now and this is how much you should have and as they do the reduction, they will have to constrain the IRP to be higher than that. And the methodology that we occupy right now is based on our international and international reading. So the number that will determine how much the allocation should be given over that period is determined at that level. So there won't be a point when now we allocate the targets and fall short in terms of meeting the international obligation or our national objective. So the methodology allows this mission protection district over a long time. Because there's also the industry can be aware of where they're going in terms of the long term trajectory of all change and the kind of instruments that will want them to put in place to be able to fulfill the objectives. So that's the answer.
Okay.
Germany, in Bonn,
But the girl would come and like to thank very much. Last week we had a joint meeting with the Standing Committee on the process of the carbon testing. I did not know that it was going to be that involved. I think the best way should have been to help this in the form of a workshop. Then we did ourselves on the process registration. We did a workshop in the last time, 2-day workshop, just to get to understand the need itself. Because I think that this carbon tax bill is quite a complex legislation. And I could pick up that I think somewhere along the way our colleagues were getting lost. Because even towards the end, when we listen to the questions that we posed, we can develop a sense that colleagues have not very understood what was the problem. Because of the complexities of the situation and the issues that are being addressed. So, unfortunately, we have our terms of that legislation. But I would have preferred a situation where there is an intensive workshop around the carbon tax legislation. So that we get to understand, not talking about the carbon budget, so forth, the carbon and the system going forward, how is it going to be. So those are the issues that I think we wanted to understand. But of course, in process by the Standing Committee, because it's a money deal. And therefore, we can't do it. But everything else about the legislation has to do with our committee. But because it's something that introduces and affects the money deal, the government has to define it. And so the Standing Committee will finalize this, but we are that we work together. So I will still have to speak to Karim and see if we can have an opportunity for us to understand it. And if it's not possible, we may then ask those officials from National Treasury together with the officials to set up a day so that they can come in 21st projects outside of the processes of waiting to adopt the legislation. But it's quite a very important legislation, which directly for what you are thinking. I still think that we need, we'll probably discuss with the minister on this one, on this additional approval of the coal power station. They are still trying to process it and see if we can keep the money for so that we can get the money for this one. Because I really think that we do need a solution. Because it's something that was very small based on the 2020 IRP before the Paris Agreement, for the development of the APC, then the intended APC and now the APC that we have found. Whether that will take us forward or not, is an issue that I think we must have a briefing on here as a committee, because there's quite some issues that we might want to raise. And finally, the IRP. Having a woman now. Nobody knows about the IRP. And I was looking at the statement where nobody comes out of there. I didn't really think that. But normally the method that has been approved, Department of Energy must release that IRP so that they can declare it. The couch. Because the IRP is not about nuclear only. Because that's the problem that seems to have the devil with IRP. emphasis became clear. Whether we could not use the technology or what, and it became a controversial issue, as opposed to what the IRP is supposed to be about next generation or about that transition that we are talking about. But it only became about nuclear. Maybe the reason why it can be so controversial is because it's about nuclear, which is not supposed to be the case. So we'll ask if there is available. In the past, we asked all these sources from any to come and refer. They did come to the past. I don't know whether he's still there, but we'll ask the minister to send the team to come to the question before they adopt the thing. I think we must do it. Very important that we get an information as to what cabinet approved. Okay. Thanks very much, colleagues. Let's get to the next one. You want to comment before?
Yes, I just want to give the honorable the correct one. So after the patient side of the disease, the top five in Africa occupied the first spot was quite above 492, followed by Guinea with 355. The DRC with 340, Congo with 308, Morocco with 253. So that's the one. Thanks.
Okay. So ahead of the Heritage delegation. Anyway, colleagues, let's get to the briefing on the protocol, study protocol.
Thank you very much, Chair. Mr. Stuart Van Gogh, who's the Senior Manager for Africa Bilateral, who will lead the presentation. Thank you.
Honourable members, Honourable Chair, apologies for the short delay, but onto that robust discussion about the outcome of COP23, maybe 5 minutes of stretching might have been in order. Honourable Chair, members, I'm going to try not to take a full hour to do this presentation, because you have heard some of it before in November, but we have amended the presentation, Chair, as you requested.
Why does it take so long?
I know there's also some pressing issues this afternoon.
Do you think it can be done by before 1 week?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. I think it's not worth a lot, but we have to be back in the house by 2 because the president like, and they put some large team.
Environment to be protected and not harmful to about 40 articles essentially arranged into six parts with a preamble, where we have the definition of the scope and the principles and objectives in part one. I'll go into each of these into a little bit more detail during the presentation. Part two is management of the actual environment as well as the transboundary consideration, which is kind of the meat of the protocol. Part three deals with the implementation and how they're going to be implemented, what the envisaged structures and so on, and cooperation mechanisms amongst member states. As well as part four deals with the cross-sectoral issues, science, technology, research, and so on. As the institutional arrangements, what kind of committees are foreseen, what kind of ministerial structures, technical committees are foreseen for the implementation, as well as the final provisions of the protocol, such as the ratification process, financial provisions, and so on. I'll go into each of these in a little bit more detail, including the preamble. The preamble reports the static treaty provisions, and the role of environment management, society and well-being. Reference to some of the big global events, being the UNCED, the World Summit on Sustainable Development, and more recently the Rio+20 conference. Global security and environment, climate change, diversification, biodiversity, water resources. The gender issues as well are also covered in this protocol. Inter-regional trade, investment, as well as the emphasis for member states to ratify international conventions. NDAs, we heard about the Doha Amendment this morning, as well as to develop common positions for these multilateral environmental agreements. And then the importance of transboundary natural resources and ecosystems as a shared management responsibility for member states. That's what the protocol is basically based on. In terms of the definition, the environment is taken from the UNEP definition, the United Nations Environment Programme, which is the entire range of living and non-living factors which influence life on Earth and their interaction. So it's more of a biophysical approach to the definition of environment. I know the South African definition goes a bit further because it deals with the environment in relation to human health and well-being. Sustainable development is the international definition for that. Development that meets the needs of present without compromising the ability of future generations to meet their own needs. The scope. In terms of the scope of the protocol, it's the marine environment, aquatic, freshwater, inland water resources, terrestrial environment, atmosphere, living and non-living resources, and environmental management within SADC, as well as the international activities outside of SADC, which promote the objectives of the protocol. Principles, similarly to NEMA, it does recognize various principles, such as environmental protection, sustainability, community pace, proportional principle, implementation, participation, and basis considerations, as well as cooperation. In terms of the objectives, largely to promote the sustainable utilization of natural resources, protection of the environment, and management of transboundary environmental impacts. Part two, protection of the environment, we've mentioned that already, as well as the actual areas of the key components of the protocol, including heritage, as well as I mentioned, marine and coastal biodiversity. The shared management and transboundary considerations are very important in this protocol, but provides that legislative framework for countries and member states across borders to cooperate in terms of managing the environment, both bilaterally as well as within the SADC region. In terms of the implementation, it deals with the general undertakings of member states, responsibilities, including natural resources and shared ecosystems, such as biospheres, how do you deal with waste and pollution that crosses borders, provides a framework for that, monitoring and reporting, information management and exchange, as well as cooperation generally on environmental management in the United States, American state. Law enforcement is also a feature of this protocol. How do you provide for environmental management for law enforcement? How do we have joint operations across borders, personnel and equipment, harmonization of systems and policies and monitoring? Yeah, kind of the harmonization, agreement on environmentally detrimental activities, cooperation on environmental crime, and also linkage towards extradition and penalties. So this does provide for that element where you have cooperation amongst law enforcement agencies across borders. In terms of international relations, encouraging the member states to domesticate the multilateral environmental agreements, as well as providing a framework to develop common positions for relevant MEAs, SADC related positions. A lot of these things have been happening already, but this protocol does provide a legal framework for that. Human resources development covers that, education and awareness, capacity building, environmental management skills transfer. Trade and investment, promotion of sustainable trade practices and investment. Investment in the environmental management sector, public-private partnerships, cleaner production standards and certification and access to markets in an environmentally sustainable way across the region. In terms of science and technology, it provides for the promotion of joint research programs, scientific advice, knowledge sharing, meteorology, early warning systems, and remote sensing, which is also linked to the climate change imperatives for the region. Information management, exchange and reporting. How do we have a more standardized way of monitoring and measuring through the set of indicators and reporting on environmental trends in the region, as well as the communication strategies for this. Gender equality, there's an article on gender mainstreaming of environmental management, recognizing vulnerable groups. How do we mainstream gender issues into the environmental management space in the SADC region, also related to gender and climate change, sustainable development, projects and programs, as well as the budget, and gender responsive environmental policies and the support thereof, as well as the strategies including capacity building, education and training. In terms of the institutional arrangements for the protocol, the highest decision making body is the committee of ministers responsible for environment, who meet every 2 years and discuss issues that are important for the region in terms of environmental management, as well as give direction and make decisions on which are the key issues, such as green economy or climate change implementation, programs around blue economy for SADC, and so on. They make the decision. The senior officials support that committee. There was also a technical committee on the environment, which is made up of the directors of environment, deals with the technical issues, and it also provides for other specialist committees and working groups. So it provides a whole suite of comprehensive institutional arrangements to support environmental management in the SADC region. Of course, the decisions of the committee of ministers responsible for environment could well find their way into to the SADC Council or even the SADC Summit, if needs be. The final provisions deals with the financials, the annexes, assets, settlement of disputes, signature ratification, entry into force, cession, reservations, amendment, repository. So, Chair, that essentially covers the full 40 articles of the SADC protocol. There's a lot more detail obviously in the protocol itself, but now I will get to the process in terms of where we are regarding the ratification of this protocol. The protocol must be approved for ratification in terms of section 2312 of the Constitution, which deals with the international agreement, must be presented to the National Assembly as well as the National Committee of Provinces, Council of Provinces. Following Federal Code as well as Department of Justice and Constitutional Development. An extensive process was conducted even during the drafting of the protocol and then again through the provincial departments responsible for Group 11 as well as MINTEC and MINMEC, and no objections and concerns were received from the provincial departments regarding the proposal for our ratification. Then we also had an extensive consultation with other national departments where our Director General sent letters to the list that's in that first bullet point, the number of departments which were most relevant to the ratification of the protocol. And we had generally the feedback about the support, or we had no objections to the ratification from these other departments. Then we went to the Global and Continental Affairs Committee, the GCAP Committee, and presented it there in the form of a draft CAP memo for the ICTS, and then went to the DG cluster, and then finally to the Cabinet Committee. All the four of them came back with the same recommendation, and so that we should proceed with the ratification of the SADC Project on Environmental Management, the Sustainable Development. Our view is that the protocol will contribute towards the sustainable development of the region of SADC, also supporting the industrialization and regional integration agenda of SADC, providing the sustainable development elements as well as a set of environmental impact assessment and strategic environmental assessment tools for the region to ensure that indeed the regional industrialization program is sustainable. Bring the sustainability element of an environmental perspective. It also facilitates the harmonization of policies and strategies and legal frameworks, making it easier to cooperate between member and amongst member states and SADC region, and improve on the coordination of environmental management plans as well as the reporting of environmental trends in the region. The subsequent coming into force following the ratification of two-thirds of SADC member states, which would be 10 out of 15, or it could be 16 now, or Comoros, would provide that legal basis for long-term coordinated environmental management, agreement on environmentally detrimental activities, amongst other things, cooperation on environmental crime, as well as developing a more standardized set of penalties for non-compliance, environmental legislation, and implementing a more coordinated environmental disaster management responses within the SADC. A joint implementation of environmental impact assessments to harmonize EIA processes, as well as to support the cross-border development of infrastructure, to have a better coordinated environmental management program, essentially, in the SADC region. I think I've spoken about this already, about the improved cross-boundary environmental management cooperation. We also believe that South Africa's ratification as current chair of SADC of this protocol will send a clear signal that the country is committed to strengthening the regional efforts to conserve cross-boundary natural resources and promote sustainable development in the region, and that the largest economy in the region, we would be expected to take a leadership role in the implementation of this program and promotion of the activities. The national implementation would be coordinated by the Department of Environmental Affairs, by relevant inputs from departments. This would be taken into the various study structures which I spoke to earlier, the Environmental Technical Committee, as well as the senior officials and ministers of environment. I think I've spoken about this issue, about Section 24, the Bill of Rights, and then gender mainstream that I've also mentioned in terms of the education. Recognition of the environment as a global security issue is something that we were a bit concerned about, but it doesn't go as far as to say that global climate change or desertification should be specifically linked to global security issues, as well as the Earth's capacity to assimilate pollution and waste. Also, the protocol calls for the facilitation of the environmental laws and policies enforcement, as well as the improvement in natural resources governance and collaboration between member states in terms of education. I've spoken to this issue of the ratification. We need a minimum of 9, but probably 10 with the addition of Comoros into the SADC fold for it to come into force. But unfortunately, there's been a very slow rate of ratification of the protocol. It sort of reminds us a bit about that the Doha Amendment doesn't really seem to ever come into force. But we would like to see as South Africa to speed up the ratification process. At the recent ministerial committee, SADC ministers of environment did actually call for an improvement in the rate of ratification of this protocol amongst member states. Several other member states indicated that they are in the process of ratifying, so we'll do our best, honourable members and chair, to ensure that the whole SADC region does ratify this protocol in the near future. Like I said, we chair of SADC until August this year, so it would strengthen our regional efforts to conserve transboundary and natural resources and promote sustainable development in SADC. I'm almost done, colleagues. The last slide is a recommendation that Parliament approves the ratification of the SADC Protocol on Environmental Management for Sustainable Development in terms of Section 2312 of the Constitution. I thank you. I hope I didn't take too much time.
Thank you. Thank you for the panel. So the presentation is quite straightforward. I think we need to have to discuss some points. And we'll present some languages and we should start. So I'm just going to open up for clarification from members and for this. And to be honest, I think no one is going to say God. When they were trying to find a suitable education, but the department was ready to come, they came last time. The only issue is the delay in making the other township for us to find. I guess we could do it in South Africa, when the current show started to run, to find the result in the this way is the way of getting our country to ratify the zone. So, there is just a report here which we have to approve. I think the committee says, committee members say they agree to the protocol as it is. So the report here says, part of the portfolio pollution is the environmental affairs of the Southern African Development Community Protocol on environmental management and sustainable development in terms of section 2312 of the Constitution, 1996, dated 23rd February 2018. The portfolio committee on environmental affairs has been considered a request for the approval by Parliament of the SADC Protocol on Environmental Affairs for Sustainable Development Table in terms of Section 2301, Subsection 2 of the Constitution, recommends that the House approve the SADC. So this is just a first report. Do we agree, honourable members, with the report? Agree, move on. Then anybody wants to move the report? Dr. Lienge, any second? Honorable Kuru second. Any further second? still busy fighting it. That's why they put it second. They had to do it. I don't know what it was doing, saying that so. It's for our colleague who was working on. Now there was a a bit of a problem. The last time we agreed that we must send some flowers and so forth. So the flowers were ordered, everything was fine. Except that they could not be delivered, which was the third part. Because the courier's staff was an issue. So we then told him for the whole thing to come there. Now, finalize and then take it through approval by the next
us to plant some issues there in the satellite. But otherwise, thank you very much for meeting with some friends and taking the attendance. Lunch, I've told, I've said, for us to